Free Fire Radio. The phone lines are open at 530-710-0765. And now, Free Fire Radio is about to commence.
Welcome to Free Fire Radio. If you're listening from your computer, we are streaming live, and we are also here at Tobacco and Brew. You'll hear us every Friday from 12 to 1. We start a little late now and then, but you know what? Just turn your computer on, freefireradio.com. We have, before we begin, we do have some thanks to our producer. And
we're at, by the way, when we say Tobacco and Brew, we're at 2143 Hilltop Drive. We have Joe and Shelley, who own Tobacco and Brew, have provided a great place for a meeting here. It's when we're not here, it's available for other people to come down and have meetings. They've got Wi-Fi capabilities. It's a great place. I'm Carl Bott. Of course, I'm joined by my bride, Linda Bott. And today's topics, we're gonna have a couple of them. The first one we want to talk about is the terrorist attack at Fort Hood and some aftermath with that. And then the next topic we have, it's so big, and I think it may be getting bigger, according to a couple of things I've heard, is the problems we're faced with illegal immigration and the impact illegal immigration has on our society and our community. We'll be joined up here today by a gentleman by the name of Mark Beachman. We'll introduce Mark when we get to this portion of the show.
First, we would like to thank our producer, Morgan Fisher. Thank you, Morgan. And we want to thank Bradley Fisher, who is our webmaster. And we want to thank Wonderland Signs for the wonderful graphics and the posters, along with Tobacco and Brew. Won't you put your hands together for the team that helps us bring this forward. Thank you. For immediate release, you'll see Kim handing you out. You know how much we love America, and we love the veterans, and we have a beautiful post over here. Freedom isn't free. Thank you to our troops and our vets, always, always at the bottom of our hearts and all that we do. But the veterans of the Korean War Association in Northern California, Chapter 1, plans a dedication of their memorial monument on Saturday, November 21st. This is going to begin at 1. Last approximately 1 hour, going to be held at the beautiful California Veterans Cemetery in Igo. Following the dedication ceremony, refreshments will be served. And this is going to be a beautiful event. Last year, I think the snow fell right. In fact, we're in Harleyville here.
There's nothing wrong with Harleyville.
No, and the snow fell right when all the wreaths were laid on the graves.
But right after the memorial for the Korean War Memorial, is from there you can go down to Yuba Street to the Veterans Center and then participate in the Christmas for the Troops packaging event. So it's a big day. We're going to be at the one up in Igo, but then of course the one down on Yuba Street. Now,
and Kim Chamberlain, thanks for all that
thank you very much.
for the veterans.
Okay, how many people here have heard that the attack on Fort Hood, if you were listening to NBC, let me put it this way, NBC or some of the others, how many of you have heard that the attack on Fort Hood and the 13 soldiers and civilians that were killed there was a terrorist attack? Just applause if you've heard that. Was this brought out by, you would say, the mainstream media, or was this something that was brought out by that other non-mainstream media, such as Fox Radio or Talk Radio Time? I'm sure it's been mentioned. You know, the fact is last week when we talked about this, when we talked about it on the right after it happened, I should say, that what I questioned was this a man that had just snapped and had the ability to have weapons and he attacked where he could? Or was this more? Yeah, well, since then, a lot has come out that Major Hassan seems to have had an ongoing love affair with the Internet, saying things like Al-Qaeda bombers should be likened to those soldiers who throw themselves on hand grenades to save their friends or save their fellow soldiers. He's had, I believe, communications with different al-Qaeda groups. And the worst thing, and this is why I believe that a big investigation or a full and thorough investigation must be made, was that this was not something that came up in a week. This has been going on for years. His comments, the things he was saying, and his strange behavior. The question is, did political correctness kill 13 Americans at Fort Hood?
So what we'd like to do, first of all, I wonder how the veteran community feels about this, because this was a fellow veteran that acted upon this heinous crime. The other thing is, do you think it was premeditated? We want to go to questions on the floor so that you have a voice. That's what we do here at Free Fire Radio on Fridays. You have lunch, come here, let's have a topic, let's have a discussion. Get it out. How do you feel? What do you think?
And the question is, and there's one right over there, is, one, was it a premeditated? Was he just somebody that went crazy and I hate to say this, my apologies to postal workers, did he go postal? Or was this a thought-out act of terrorism to strike back at American soldiers?
We had a...
Well, just have to give one name there.
The idea that he was being deployed and he didn't want to fight his brotherhood. That's why he went off.
Because he didn't want to fight fight other Muslims.
Okay.
Are you able to hear that? The other one? Okay.
Because we're not being able to hear.
You got another statement out here.
Okay. So here we go.
Okay, so the act is, does anybody believe the act was not premeditated, though? From what I understand, he had emptied his apartment out. He had said his goodbyes over a period of several days. So it was no doubt that he was going out that day to make a statement.
Dave here. I believe he's part of a sleeper cell, an individual that's acting on his own, as well as support from al-Qaeda or others that are out there. I believe that this is one that's going to continue to happen, because the more that people you get involved with it in his group, the easier he will be detected. But as an individual group running that and stepping out alone like he did, he can do more destruction. And I'm here to tell you that if we can get him now, we need to do it and not wait any longer. 9/11 has been several years back. We are asleep right now. We're thinking we're safe. We're not.
That's a real good statement, because 9/11, after 9/11, people appeared to be ready. And now here it is, 8 years later, 9 years later, and people, you don't hear people talk about it. It's never in the news. And even when somebody who yells Allah Akbar and starts the attack, it's not mentioned that perhaps this is an Islamic fundamentalist attack against our forces. Now, I'm not going to jump to conclusions, because there does have to be an investigation, but right now it's walking like a duck, and it's quacking like a duck, and it's got feathers like a duck. Now, maybe we're going to find out that this isn't true. It's not really a duck. It's a chipmunk. But right now, it's quacking. So.
Well, and also we as Americans preach tolerance. We are a nation of we call ourselves, everyone at somewhere in their lives comes from an immigrant. So we have to have tolerance in our lives, and we don't want to, have this scared notion of Islam, but that's why we wanted to ask how you feel about this. How do we have a table here for people to come forth and speak your fears or your concerns? And how do we as Americans and in our government in the future watch for, why didn't anybody pick this up? Why didn't anybody report it? And the reason that we hear people didn't report it was because they thought that they were going to be racially profiling somebody if they did.
I think there's some comments back here. I tell you what we'll do. We'll just use the cord. come up here and join us.
Hi, I was agreeing with Linda. I think that the people did see there was a real problem, but they did not want to lose their job or ranking or pay or something. And so this is sad when we cannot use good judgment to decide. And then so many people die just because you don't want to. We're going to have to start sacrificing as individuals and standing up for right, and it's going to cost us. And we have to all start standing up for what is right.
The question is, what is it going to cost us?
Well, I think you're not going to be popular. I think you're going to sound like you're racially profiling or whatever they say. I think even in our own community, sometimes I don't call in on the radio because I think, well, how's that going to sound? But I do believe sometimes I don't say things that I think are true or right because of how it's going to be made out to be something else, or you're going to be called names or something. So I think in lots of areas, schools, jobs, our homes, our community, we need to start standing up for what's right. And we also need to start doing what's right, and it is going to cost us.
Well, you know, part of the problem, I see it, is that we took a huge step forward in our country when a black American was elected president. A huge step forward. But we also took maybe a step backwards at the same time, in the sense that if you disagree with President Obama on his policies, it doesn't take long for the racial card to be played. Oh, you know, I mean, how many times have you seen written or said that, oh, they disagrees with him, it's because it's a racial thing, as opposed to being a disagreement on policy. I don't think that when, you know, Bush was president or Clinton was president, if there was a black American that disagreed with them, they said it was a racial thing.
African American. Correct term.
It's a black American. Yeah. I'm a white American. You know, in the Marine Corps, you were green, you were light green or dark green. You know, that was it, and that was enough, and that's the way we categorized ourselves. And I'm not, you know, and if I'm going to be, you know, castigated because I say use the term black American or white American, then maybe it is too late. Maybe it is too late to vote, but it's too, you know, still too early for guns, I think is an old saying. But the, you know, the problem is that this lack of doing the right thing, because we are concerned that people are going to think that we are racially motivated, plays into so many other questions that's plaguing our society right now. I think there's another comment out here.
Yes, can you move forward? Because
and part of that is,
it's okay. Thank
and
you.
Part of that is the fact of our other topic today of illegal immigration. If you say that there's a problem with this, it's like, oh my gosh, you're against it because you're racially motivated. I mean, how far away from the truth could that be?
I think it's time for the Muslims who claim that they're peaceful and want to live by our standards in this country need to come forward and turn in the radicals. They all go to the same mosques, and I know they know who they are. And I think they need to step forward and show us that all Muslims are not radicals and jihadists, and they're the ones that need to do it.
And the vast majority of the Muslims in our country are like that. They are peace-loving. But when are we going to have a million Muslim march? You know, a million Muslims that believe in peace and believe in our country. They live here. When are they going to have a march?
Just a wonder. We have another question over here.
Well, the thing is, I think it's Mac. I think that when a Muslim's getting ready to be deployed, I think you ought to be a closer look at, you know what I mean? Not, you know, so much as on his back or whatever, but just keep an eye on the man. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Or else it could happen again. I mean, this way here, at least you got a heads up on it. You know what I mean? I'm not saying stay with him and accuse him of anything, but kind of keep an eye on him. See what he's up to. And then, he don't want to find his own kind. That's what I think happened here. when it came to be deployed time, that's when he went off. So, because he didn't want to fight his brothers. And I think it happened again. It will happen again.
Well, you know, there's over 2,500 Muslims fighting in the armed forces right now, including ones that I've served with over in Iraq. And that was never a problem. There was, I believe that one Marine sergeant said that, you know, they were looked at closer because they were Muslim. You know, they're praying out there, and then in the next 10 minutes they're getting into a fight with other people of the Muslim faith. But it's you know, you don't want to like go overboard with it on it. You know, I'm just saying, though, but it should be just a check for everybody. They knew the major was doing a number of strange things with his emails and his statements and his PowerPoint presentations and the things he was saying to the troops. I mean, there was one thing after another that should have had somebody in the chain of command should have grabbed him and brought him in and said, what's going on here? In fact, I believe at one time, one of either Sergeant Major or his colonel said, you've got to tone this down. This is not, you know, you don't tell the troops it's not a good idea to go over and fight.
I don't know if this is a question or a statement, but my name is Marty. I am a Air Force veteran. And the news has, they're digging all that kind of stuff up on him. And it's good that they're digging. Why didn't we know about this before? Point, counterpoint. One of his supervisors at Walter Reed Hospital noticed that he was acting a little differently, that he was kind of harassing some of his patients. If it had been an enlisted man, they have Article 15, that dude, and backed him out the back door. One of the military's comments is he was promoted to major because there's a lack of openings, and he was rapid promoted. I guess where I'm coming to, I think some of our military officials in the officer ranks dropped the ball because they didn't want to be the whistleblower. They didn't want their performance evaluations pointing at them for declaring something wrong. I feel there was a breakdown in the upper ranks, officer ranks, that didn't detect this sooner, especially with all this other activity. So,
well, you know, that could be. And again, when you go into the fact of, as the statement was earlier from Roberta, that is that people sometimes, our moral courage slips at times. You know there's the right thing to do, but sometimes you don't do it because of the veritable barrage of comments that are going to come back your way. Does that mean that's right? No, absolutely not. Whoever noticed this, there should have been, and maybe there were comments on his efficiency reports, or what we call them, fitness reports, that said this man's got severe problems. This man is doing this, but for some reason, it didn't. Now,
does this kind of segue into? Have we taken all the questions on the floor? By the way, if you are just now getting online, you're listening to Carl and Linda Bott here, Free Fire Radio. Here at Tobacco and Brew. We're talking about, well, Fort Hood. We've heard several comments from the floor, and we're going into a topic with a special guest. This has kind of been on the tip of our tongues for all of us, illegal immigration. How's it affecting our country? How do you really feel about it? Et cetera.
Press one
for English, two for what?
Two for... Deportation. Press one for English. Press two for deportation.
Someone's holding a sign up in the back.
You know, and okay, I tell you what. When this thing first happened, when I said press one for English, I didn't understand that. I mean, it's because, well, I speak English. I mean, isn't that the language of our country? No, not officially, it's not. And in fact, bilingual. You could almost say America is becoming bilingual in many of the areas of this country. Well, in fact, in many areas of this country, Spanish is spoken more than English. Now, when you start talking about this, again, you have the danger of people saying, well, you obviously are having a problem with people coming to this country to better themselves, and it's a racial thing. No, it's not a racial thing. It's a fact for me, and I don't want to sound mercenary, It's a money thing. It's a money thing and a political thing. It's got nothing to do with color or religion or anything else. So we're going to be discussing the problems of illegal immigration.
Before we do that, why don't you share a story of your good friends and what it took for them to become Americans, their process.
Okay, I have a close friend that worked with me. He was in the Royal Navy. He was in the Royal Navy with a top secret clearance. He had clearances so high that I'm not sure part of the Pentagon would have them. He worked for us in the Marine Corps on top secret projects. He went back to, after his tour was finished, he went back to England. He came over to the United States to work for a company here. And he applied for citizenship. They loved America. He and his wife and their two kids loved America. So they came back and applied for the green card. 3 years later, they're still in the process of getting it. Had to go back to England, had to go back and get another visa so they could come back to the United States.
Thousands of dollars,
and came back. Now, a year later, he finally gets the green card. So now they're here, you know, legally, and they want to become citizens. At the same time, how many million illegal people came across the border of all persuasions and are working here? So coming here legally is not easy. It was after 9/11, but you have to remember he comes from England, and he had the top secret clearances that we in the United States gave him, and yet they couldn't get him through the security portion of it. Now, is there places for fast-tracking certain people and all this? You know, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying is that to do it legally is not easy. To do it illegally is real easy. Now,
before we began our program today, we heard, so don't quote me, but we heard that it just came out on the wire that President Obama wants to legalize, was it 10 or 15 million illegal immigrants next year?
Did anybody hear that? Somebody walked in earlier today and said he had heard that on the news over, is that they were going to present legislation to legalize or to give citizenship on a fast track to up to 12 million illegals.
And how is that going to affect our country and our working force at
right.
this
anyway,
at this point?
Anyway, I have not seen that. I don't know where that came from. But so just take that as scuttlebutt. You know, that was a rumor from the third stall on the left. Now,
love it.
We're joined today, however, for this on our conversation, because sometimes we forget that there are reasons that we have people here working in our country at lower payer jobs. But our guest today is Mr. Mark Beauchamp, who is a fine writer. He has a blog for the Record Searchlight, not business as usual. He was a former editor at Forbes magazine. He's got a great head on his shoulders for business and what makes business turn. He can talk about almost any subject that we've ever brought up, except perhaps snakes underneath the sea. But then again, I haven't asked him that, so maybe he does. Anyway, Mark, please welcome Mark Beauchamp.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, we can sit down. We can sit down for a minute, then I'm going to go running out because the question is, should we shut the borders down and should we not allow immigration until we get our hands, any immigration, until we get our arms around what's going on? So when I say any immigration, does that mean all immigration? So it doesn't make any difference. What country, does it matter if they are trying to come in legally, we just stop everything until we get our arms around it. Okay. Mark?
Immigration is a very, very complex issue. Carl and I were talking about this yesterday, and we were emailing back and forth. So the next thing I know, I've been invited to sit on this panel, and I'm certainly not up here to defend illegal immigration, but I'd like to be able to offer some what I would consider common sense observations on the topic based on a career of living overseas and also working in business journalism in Southern California and covering high-tech companies in Silicon Valley, companies in Southern California and elsewhere in the United States that were founded by immigrants. Some of our most successful companies that we have had in the last 50 years, Intel, was founded by an immigrant from Hungary, Andy Grove. And talking to these people and spending time in the culture of Silicon Valley and talking and spending time with immigrants in Southern California has given me an appreciation for a work ethic that I find is too often missing in native-born Americans these days. Some of the hardest working people you're ever going to meet are immigrants who come here. They don't come here to get lined up in front of the welfare office or get on disability like too many people in Shasta County do today. They come here to work, and they come here to better themselves, and they come here for a better opportunity for their kids. And we are all better for it. And I would go so far as to say it's a symbolic act, but I think we ought to change the Constitution to make it possible for a non-native-born American to become president of the United States, to acknowledge the fact, the contributions that immigrants have made to our economy and our life in this country. Every one of us at some point in their history comes from an immigrant family. My family, my grandfather, came from England, and before that from Germany on my mother's side. So all of us have immigrant roots. Immigration has made this country what it is and will, I believe, save our bacon going forward, frankly, because if we don't have healthy amount of immigration, I'm not talking illegal immigration. I think we need to work on a guest worker program to address a lot of those issues. But we need to scour the world to bring the very best and brightest and hardest working people into this country. I remember back in the late 1980s when Hong Kong was there were a lot of people in Hong Kong with money and talent and corporate entrepreneurs who were worried about what would happen when Hong Kong reverted to China. And they, many of them, because Canada had a less restrictive immigration policy, they got second homes and residence visas in Canada, especially many of them in Hong Kong. And I remember talking to a guy who ran a think tank in Southern California. He said at the time, you know, if we were smart, we would be sending 747s to Hong Kong empty and bringing back to the United States to live the best and brightest in Hong Kong. And it resonated with me. And I realized that it's probably an extreme view for people in this room today, given a lot of the demagoguery, frankly, about the immigration issue, which centers on pictures of largely Hispanic people overwhelming hospitals in Southern California and along the Texas border. But we have to keep in mind that we shouldn't let the immigration debate be defined only by those images. Immigration goes far beyond that. And it's, like I said, it's a very complex issue. And I hope that the subtleties and the nuances and the profound economic consequences are not ignored in some sort of an attempt to close the door on immigration in all forms.
Well, the interesting thing about that, Mark, is that I think that's a world vision. That is an intelligent, broad vision. I think for many of us, when we think of illegal immigration, we think of those hospitals and emergency rooms in Southern California and many places in our country that have been closed down, and the babies that are dropped in America that all of a sudden become citizens. So a lot of people have a problem with the fact maybe the media has fed us that, but that this is how we see that we are our rights of being able to go in and get a great medical care in emergency has been stomped on by those crossing our border and taking advantage of our system.
You know, it's a I hear what you're saying, Mark, but to me, what defines a nation? it's a boundary that it beca- you know, that's your country, so it's a boundary and it's a common language. No country can have, no nation can have unbounded immigration from all parts of the world within and survive. The way that you take immigration, the people that come here, you have to assimilate them. And the way you assimilate them, it's into our society, into our mores, to our language, to our education system. That's the way, and you know, that's the way an immigrant should come into the country, and that we have the time and the amount of services available to do that. When you're overwhelmed, when you're inundated by people that are here illegally, they do not assimilate into our culture. They do not throw away their loyalties to the country they came to. They have their own enclaves. It's, you've seen it happen in Europe everywhere. You're seeing parts of the United States where Spanish is the language that's being spoken. From the from the Census Bureau, that 9% of the Mexican population lives in the United States. Now, I'm not picking on Mexican Hispanic people that are here legally, but why, as we as a nation, and from all political parties, you know, Bush, Clinton, and Obama, nobody has addressed the fact that we have a problem here. We have a problem in that we're being overwhelmed by the amount of people that keep coming into our country.
We have a special guest as well. And please welcome George Miranda.
Welcome, George.
So I'm going to hand you this microphone, which is a little sensitive, so you need to talk right into it. George, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you. My name is George Miranda. I'm a first-generation Mexican-American. I was I was born in Mexico, was brought here when I was about 2 days old. Grew up here. This is my home. I have a business here in Shasta County. I built my business on American ingenuity, American quality. You know, I build parts for bikes, for Harleys. I do custom engraving. I hear this immigration topic brought up quite a bit, but it brings me to think sometimes about the duplicity of the argument. On one hand, you have people that are here illegally. Now, I can say that I know what it's like to live in third world country. Some of you folks here are veterans. You guys have been overseas where it's a third world environment. It's ugly. People want to go towards something better. Now, there's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way to do it. Me personally, my parents, they brought me through, and they brought me through the right way. I've been here my entire life. There's nothing more that I would like to do is to be able to just be able to share what I feel with my relatives, you could say, in Mexico. I'm doing things the right way, but sometimes desperation causes us to do things in a lot of ways that are not right. And I'm not justifying a lot of what's going on, a lot of what happens. The duplicity in the argument, just one example I can come up with right off the top of my head. USCIS website, if you go on a United States Citizenship and Immigration Services website, it gives an outline of what rights you're given, what rights are conveyed to you upon receiving your permanent resident status, for example. One of those rights is the right to vote in state and local elections. You could vote for mayor. You could vote for tax rates, you know, certain property rights if they want to hike them, things of that nature. However, what I've seen is the two-edged sword that comes along is in order to register to vote, you have to affirm under penalty of perjury that you're a United States citizen. Or if you're a permanent resident alien, you're not a United States citizen. But in order to be able to exercise your right to vote as it's given to you when you obtain your permanent resident status, you have to register to vote. And in order to register to vote, you have to perjure yourself. So you're breaking the law in order to want to exercise a right given to you by the law. There's a duplicity in the argument. I followed that a little bit further. When I moved up here to Shasta County, it kind of started bugging me a little bit. So I went into the local voter registrar's office here. And I asked him to do some digging for me. Turns out California, of all states, it struck me as weird, of all states with as much of the Hispanic population as the state carries, the California state constitution does not allow for anybody that's not a citizen to vote. So there's a duplicity in the argument right there. You know, whereas the federal government grants certain rights to people that are, and that kind of just lends to people sometimes in desperation, they start to think, well, why should I do things right if I'm going to be penalized one way, or if I'm promised one thing, and then on the flip side, it's taken away from me. And like I said, it's one of those things. Personally, a lot of people, I catch a lot of flack from relatives, for example, on my side of things. I have two children. I have my son and my daughter. Both of them don't know a lick of Spanish. That's just the way it is. My wife and I, we brought them up that way. We figured it's hard enough to master your own language, let alone to try to master a second one. The English language, it's a beautiful language. It's complex, has so many different parts and pieces to it. And my thinking was, I'm going to want my children to master this language. They were both born here in the United States. One in Arizona, one in Southern California. That's my thinking. And what's coming up and what I've been seeing lately is a lot of these first and second generation Mexican-American kids that grew up, were born here in the 70s and the 80s, they're starting to make their way through life. They're bringing a whole new perspective. And they agree a lot more with the argument as far as, well, legal immigration is wrong, but it's the approach in which it takes. I mean, anybody can go and round up a bus and say, send them back. They did it back in the 70s. I remember hearing stories when I was growing up about, you know, immigration raiding lumber mills up in Crescent City and loading a bunch of people in buses and taking them back down to the border. A week later, those guys were back up here again working in the same green chain line in the lumber mill. And that was one approach to one problem that didn't really give any result, because those people are now, some of them have been naturalized since then. So we need to, I think, approach this discussion in a manner that's more realistic, in a sense, like, me personally, I believe education is a foundation to anything. If a person's educated in something, and educated doesn't mean you go to school and learn from books, just that. It could be that, but it could also be talking to somebody and having just a logical discussion with them. Me personally, I don't have any problem telling someone that's here illegally, look, as long as you're not taking from the system, you're not out there breaking any laws, and you're contributing, which in a way is kind of a roundabout way of saying, just basically, you're here to work, stay out of trouble, but don't ask for what isn't yours. On the flip side, you have the people are like, well, I'm here, I'm going to take advantage of everything that's there for me to take. That's not right. And I don't have any problem, me personally, as, like I said, first-generation Mexican-American, bringing that up and bringing that to attention, saying, you guys can't do this. You've got to contribute to the society that you want to be a part of. And then turn around and ask for help if you need it, you know?
George, we appreciate, you know, your viewpoint on this, but we go back again to the idea that don't take anything that you're not legally entitled to is one of the problems we're having now, is that how can you turn away by law? You can't turn away children from an education, and you can't turn away people from an emergency room. How many hospitals and clinics have closed down because they've been overrun because of the amount of people there now that have come there? Now, you can say, well, we don't have health insurance. Okay, that's part of it. But if you look at the statistics show that many of the people that go to our emergency rooms and our health centers were here illegally. And I'm not just saying from Mexico, but from every place. Also, it shows, if you look at the statistics, that the average, there's one in eight people in the United States as of 2007. The nation's immigrant population reached a record of 38 million in 2007. And immigrants account for one in eight U.S. residents, the highest level in 80 years. In 1970, it was one in 21. In 1980, one in 16. And overall, nearly one in three immigrants is an illegal alien. Now, when you think about that when the number of people that are here illegally who then use the social services, and I think the average of that is like 30,000 by the time you add up, health care, education, and such. I think we've reached the point where People that are coming here and doing it the right way, I applaud. People that aren't here legally, you know, the idea says, well, you can't round them all up and send them back. You don't have to. You go to the employers and you enforce the laws on the books. If you want to hire somebody that's here illegally, you don't have the proof for it, fine, you're going to pay a $25,000 fine. And we're going to keep upping that fine every time you do it. You don't have to chase people out of this country when there's no, when they won't hire people here illegally. Then they're going to go back. Now they may, you know, you can also put on there that before they get any of the social services from this country, from our states, you've got to prove citizenship. But we as a country, as our politicians, do not have the guts to do this. Why is that?
I don't know, Duke. Should we take questions from the floor? Does anybody have questions? Good.
We need to change here.
I think we have a system, our Social Security numbers. When I had to, years ago, file a workers' comp claim, I was denied because I had to prove who I was, because 10 people were using my Social Security number under different names. And it was up to me to prove that that was my Social Security number. So they have a system that already shows one Social Security number being used by several people. Why isn't our government following through with the system we already have intact, following through on that? But I had to prove who I was. My benefits had been all used. I was given a temporary Social Security number during the time while I had to get all the documents to prove who I was. So we do have a system. We just need to get some smarter brains, I guess.
So do you think the system is broken?
We're not using it.
Okay, so...
Okay, just by a show of hands, which nobody can see on the radio, so you have to trust me. How many people think the system's broken?
Okay.
Okay, everybody but Trudy.
Okay. So,
oh, no,
okay.
Trudy just raised her hand. Okay.
We have a question.
I didn't mean to point you out and embarrass you, Trudy. But.
Kim, do you have a question? Great. Okay.
I am also first generation of immigrant. I am very fortunate to marry an American citizen. And what it is not only government problem, it's all of us problem. And we need to keep eye on vigilantly at local level to the county level to the state level. Because you do see illegal immigrant, undocumented they call it, and you know they are around, but we all ignore it. So we could start from the local level to register, and go through the right procedure. As it is, okay, I've been here since 1971. This is a small example. My younger brother got murdered. He left two children behind. And in Korea, when head of father, so-called father, died, children have a very glimpse to growing up properly. So I was going to adopt them, and I was going to bring them to this country and sponsor them. You know, our government gave me nothing but running around, because I am not considered immediate family, even though we have financially, we could support those children. So make long story short, that I did send the money to help out, but government make it harder for some area and so easy to ignore the rest of them. So if you see the illegal immigrant, undocumented resident, and, you know, report to your local authority and have them take care from there on. And not only citizen get benefit, legal resident, which means that they properly documented to rightfully enter this country as a resident, they should get a benefit because they work, they pay the taxes. But undocumented resident, they do not pay taxes. They use other people's identification to pay for somebody else. In the some way, some people who do use this Social Security, the illegal immigrant use, they do get billed up. That I do know. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank
we
you
do
very
have
much.
A we have a phone call. So I guess we go like this, right? Press the star.
Good afternoon. Morning. You're on Free Fire Radio.
Good morning. I dare say if immigrants that came to this country were like Kim, this country would be even greater than it is, because she's one of the best examples of an immigrant who has come to America, who understands what this country is about, a nation under God with equal rights for all. She's a great lady. I wanted to know that. I only listened to part of the show today. I had a phone call and couldn't hear everything that the young man said, but I got the impression that he seemed to think that illegal immigrants should be allowed to vote. Am I misunderstanding him?
George,
that's not what I meant at all. What I was trying to make a point was about the duplicity in the law. The USCIS code allows permanent resident aliens the right to vote on a local level and a state level, not on a federal level. That's on the website. You can look it up. You know, just go on uscis.org or .gov, I believe it is, and look up what the rights that are given to a permanent legal resident alien are. And that's one of them. However, the duplicity in it comes in where in order to register to vote, you have to perjure yourself. So you're breaking the law in order to take advantage of something that is given to you by the law. And that's where we need to get, there's a lot of angles to this argument that need to be addressed. And that's just one little tidbit of an example of one.
So you're talking about permanent immigrant rights, not what an illegal immigrant.
No, he's talking about they're here legally and they've got permanent resident status, and they just can't vote. But even though they are here as a permanent status, now can they get their citizenship?
Yeah, they're open to get their citizenship. Some of them choose not to. They're afraid about whatever country. For example, in Mexico. Mexico does allow for dual citizenship. You can be a Mexican citizen and an American citizen, and the U.S. does allow that. However, you got other countries, for example, that don't allow it. So some of them, in order to hold whatever property they might have in their country of origin, they hang on to that by a permanent resident status.
Do you believe that there should be amnesty? Are you in favor of that?
Are you in favor of amnesty?
Honestly, I was around in the 80s. I was still a kid, probably in high school. I got to grow up in Southern California. I got to see that amnesty program put to work, where there was a shortage of farm workers, believe it or not, in Southern California. They were cracking down real hard, and there was an abundance of workers wanting to cross the border. They provided 6-month amnesty cards so they can come over and work during the harvest, and then they went home to, you know, back home to Mexico, and they had to reapply. The program down there worked beautifully. Those people were not allowed to take care of any advantage of any of the social services available to anybody here in the States, but they were allowed to come and work and make money. In other words, help the industry.
Yeah,
correct. But if we confined the number of immigrants here to those that were working on farms, we would have far fewer than we do. You understand that?
Yes, I do. However, we also got to understand that in order for an industry to operate, you need people to work it. And honestly, I mean, farm work, I don't know if you've been around farm workers. It's a medial job. I mean, picking crops and sitting out there with a hoe, you know, taking weeds out.
I've done that.
It's pretty hard work.
Hey, thank you so much for your phone call.
My husband's an example of that, that when you were in high school and sometimes in college, you did farm work to get through school, which is exactly what he did. And in the state of Washington, it wasn't something that only immigrants did. People that lived in the community did it.
I picked apples in Washington, Yakima, Washington.
So there are people who will do it. I've really not quite accepted the fact that only immigrants will do that kind of work. I was just curious, too. I'm concerned that the new immigrants that come to this country understand the Christian heritage we have and that liberty comes from God. And I was just wondering if you're familiar with America's history and if how much it means to you.
Me personally, ma'am, I'm honestly first-generation born-again Christian. We attend Mountain Lakes House of Prayer Church with Pastor Jay Spinks. I believe in Jesus Christ, God, family, and country. You know, but I know what you're talking about.
Thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you. We have another question in the House. This is good today.
Well,
ooh.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate it. First of all, the young lady, the Asian lady, was saying the government. We are the government. It's not they. It's we. That's number one. Number two, we're invaded. This is an invasion. Nothing less. If a bunch of Germans came over here with Nazi helmets on, you would call it an invasion. This is an invasion. I hold our elected leaders responsible. There are words for this. There are strong words. Sedition is one of them. These people have sold us out lock, stock, and barrel. Why? They're doing it for the money. Follow the money, and you'll find out why this is happening. And right under our nose. Carl, you're absolutely right. Shut the money supply off. But the way they're getting out of it, they're working at, and these are nice jobs they're taking. These aren't, I've picked grapes, I know what I'm talking about. These are nice jobs. But to say that have the employers shut them down, the employers are, in a sense, can do anything they want because there's no way to tell. They could show up with a phony driver's license. They show up with a phony birth certificate, phony ID. And they say, well, we didn't know. Well, how do you fix that? So shut off the supply.
Well, I think it's got to be a combination of efforts. Now, one of the things George said is a program that was very successful by having workers come across the border and the CERO program. And I think that was not only in Asia, but back in the 50s, too, that they brought people across for 6 months at a time or whatever the season was. They were taken care of by the growers that brought them over. They were paid, you know, fair wage. They had living places and all that, health. And then at the end of the season, they went back across the border. In the early, okay, now that was right after World War II when they when all the workers were pushed back, and it was a huge operation there. But the thing is it goes back to one thing. You've got to own the borders. You have to own our own borders. Unless you own our borders, it's everything we say, everything that everybody believes in is never going to happen.
Again, and it's also accountability. People standing, you vote with your feet, and it's about standing up for what's right.
Well, what about the deal like the immigrants you're talking about? Come over here and work, what have you, which is fine and dandy, but most of the time, they send the money back to their country. They don't even keep the money in this country. They send it back. So, I mean, that's not accomplishing America nothing. So.
And by the way, our phone number here is 710-0765. And also, if you've just heard part of this and you're listening to it or you want to hear more on this, you want to revisit us one more time, freefireradio.com. Go to our website and you'll be able to, one is read the just a very, very well-written opinion about illegal immigration on the front page.
And also we'll have a little blurb of on YouTube.
And it's going to be on YouTube. But also go into our archives and the show will be up today. It will be up today, later on today, so you can tell your friends and say that, talk about some of the things that we've talked about here.
George, I'd like to say one thing to you. I don't know my statistics all that well from the past, but I understand that the percentage of immigrants that have come through and become citizens of the United States, like yourself, that a lot of those boys are now fighting for our freedom in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and are dying for us. Those, I have to applaud them and thank them for what they're doing for us right here. The other thing I have to say to you on that is I just seen where they just swore in, what was it, 1,000 over in Iraq not too long ago to become citizens of the United States. And that I love to see because that tells me they've taken the initiative to go the right avenue to become citizens. Was Shelley there? Or I have to agree. My daughter-in-law had somebody in the L.A. area that had the same Social Security number as my daughter-in-law, and we've been fighting it for 6 months. So let's do it the legal way and make it right. Thank you.
Hey, you know, if you want to fast-track your way into becoming an American citizen, just go someplace and let bad people shoot at you. Okay, we've got another comment back here.
Okay. Personally, we are a country of immigrants. Both my grandparents' sets were from Germany and Sweden. They came to Ellis Island. They had to take physicals. They had to have sponsors when they came. They had to have jobs lined up before they got in this country. And my grandma from Sweden was only 19 years old and couldn't speak a word of English. She got a job as a domestic in Chicago. That's how she got here and then met my grandfather later. But we have no problem with people. I love your culture. I love this ladies' Asian culture. I have no problem with it. I like to feel like we're diverse. I think the thing scares us mostly, we have no control over who's coming in our borders, and they're not all people like you, George. And we worry about the gangs, the drug cartels. A lot of the sleeper cells of Muslims have come through the southern border, and that's the tragedy. That's the tragedy.
I agree with you 100%. It's me personally, my family. I got law enforcement. I got my kid brother's a law enforcement officer. My sister-in-law, she's a nurse at a corrections facility. I got family that works with Department of Homeland Security. You know, it's pretty much one of those things where me personally, I'm getting ready to start up college again and running a business, believe it or not. But my ultimate goal is to be an attorney to help address some of these things, but in a non-sleazy way. You know, I mean, it's
can just, you do that?
I was an honest mechanic for a lot of years, so I think I can handle being an honest attorney.
Whoa.
You had good training ground. Okay,
you know, let me say here, we're going to have to wrap this up.
Yeah.
We're running after. You know, this is one of those subjects that people could come in and out and talk about this for days. I guess the bottom line is unbridled immigration. You might want to ask the Native Americans how that worked for them.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that if we don't do something about it, that that our nation, the way we see it, is not going to be our nation 10 years from now. How many freedoms have we lost in the last 10 years? How many things are in the process of being changed right now? If I don't buy health insurance, I go to jail. I'm sorry. I don't remember that being in the Constitution. You know, where does it say that the money that I make and the people that are making in their jobs that George is making goes to people that shouldn't even be here? Where does it say that a person that's here illegally that's in jail gets better medical care than Marty does, who's a veteran? Where does it say that? There's time for changes. And people say, well, where were you before? The American people are a wonderful, open, forgiving people that piss us off, and it just doesn't stop. You know, you might want to ask some Germans from World War II or the Japanese that, you know, at a certain point, enough's enough. And I think that's what's going on. I think you're starting to see people at this point wanting to see a change and not the change that was coming down the pipe on us.
Where we are running out of time here with our Free Fire Radio, what do you want to call it, internet show here. Mark, thank you for, you know, opening up the discussion today. Do you have any closing thoughts?
That's been a good panel discussion. I would just go back to my original point, which is I think we need to not allow some of these really divisive, hot-button issues about immigration cloud the benefits that this country has reaped from a history of immigrants, and focus on the benefits as well as some of the challenges that we face on this subject.
I think that's wonderfully said, and that we can all learn from each other and a diverse culture. We have to think along those terms. George, do you have any closing comments?
Pretty much. Just me. I feel blessed to be an American. I feel blessed to be a part of this culture in this country. And I can only promise you folks here, something that I've always done is to share what I feel and what I know about this great nation and what I've learned over the years with people that want to get on the right track to be where I am at today. And that's all I can really add to it, and just encourage you guys to do the same.
Thank you, George. I would urge people, and I don't do this very often, but Mark Levin, It's a book called Liberty and Tyranny. If you have not read this book, do yourself a favor. Now, it was handed to me by Frank Rose, who's in the back of the room there. He handed it to me probably last year sometime, and I'm still reading it, but I'm finished now, Frank. And so, but it's a book that makes you think. It's called Liberty and Tyranny by Mark Levin. Okay. I'd like to thank everybody for being here, all of our audience. Give yourselves a round of applause.
Yeah. What?
Of course, Fred and Tony for doing the camera work here. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
And of course, Shelley and Joe with Tobacco and Brew, and Brad and Morgan. Thank you, because we want to keep the conversation going. We want you to show up on Friday. Let's give us a list of some things that you would really like to discuss. We'll do our homework. We'll get some exciting, interesting people who are going to spill and give you great statistics and some things that they feel. We want to keep it open.
Yeah, and one of the things we're going to talk about, one of the topics next week is Afghanistan. What's going on?
All right. So thank you so much. This is Carl and Linda Bond here on Free Fire Radio. Again, you can catch us on the archives. Go to our website. Let us know what you think. Drop us an email. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.